and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets, it's Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
I think we should cancel this podcast until we're better rested.
I'm never better rested.
Oh, fuck.
Ever. I have been tired since I was, like, I don't know, 12. I blame comic books.
I like comic books.
Because I've been reading comic books when I go to bed since I was 12. And I always want to stay up and read more. More, I tell you, more!
There is always more to read. Even in this time where people are fretting, I can't get any new comic books! Well, guess what? You probably have comic books in your collection you have never read.
Yeah, just, you know, stuff you picked up. Or, you know, here's the other thing. There are all these comic book streaming services now. You've got your Netflix and your Hulu and your Peacock and your Amazon Prime. But with comics, there's a Comixology. There's Marvel Unlimited. There's DC Universe. There's Graphic
Maybe.
What do you mean, maybe?
Well, with the new HBO service launching, people are kind of fretting what's going to happen with DC. But that's a different subject. That's more of a freaking.
Yeah. And there's all kinds of stuff going on in comics now, too.
Not to mention, you have oodles of guys online, and I point to the esteemed, beloved Tony Isabella, who for years has been reviewing comic books, not only in the Comic Buyer's Guide, but on his blog and on his Facebook page, that you could go back and listen to some of the things he may have suggested. Not only that, but we've got how many years? How many episodes do we got of this here podcast?
458, I believe this is 458.
And you know, we've done review shows almost every episode. We mentioned some comics that we... So if you're bored, you've got lots of things you can do. Matter of fact, I got a pile. Corey, I got a pile of books here. How about if we just do an old-fashioned review show?
That sounds good.
Oh, excellent.
So what's the first comic you got on your list there?
I've got one called No Romance in Hell by Haina Hell. And let's see. Written, illustrated, copyrighted, published by Silver Sprocket out of Canada. And again, one thing I always look for is to see if there's a website or anything. So I don't see any. So you're just going to have to go look for it. But it was published in 2020. And No Romance in Hell is, as you might have suggested, fortunately, a poor demon in hell is pining for romance. The demon she really wants to go for is just too into his job of tormenting the damned, the eternally damned. I mean, really, Corey, if you have a beautiful demon tugging at your G-strings, would you just kick her away in order to poke the eternally damned with a stick? Well, he does, and she just, you know, I mean, this reads a lot like a romance comic. So what do you think this poor demon does in order to, you know, been rejected? Well, she basically hops on the elevator and heads to Earth. Well, she goes, once she gets past, there's like a giant cockroach that's in front that tells her that, well, you know, you can't go up without proper papers. You'll need to go over demon resources and request an application for leave of absence. Once your application is processed and approved, you receive some forms to complete your formal request. Once forms are submitted, quadruple, blah, 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 blah. So she does whatever, you know, demon apparently can do. Has some type of burn vision and just incinerates the cockroach and finds herself up on Earth. Now, I'm not going to go over too much, but, you know, obviously there are some picture differences. You know, first thing that happens when she walks out of the elevator, everybody screams in panic. So, you know, she obviously has to change her appearance, but she wanders through and finally discovers, well, there's no real way to it's internet dating. Yeah, she discovers that. So she tries to go through that, and I won't spoil the surprise as to whether or not she finds love or not. But the one thing that happens is she does read a lot of romance comics. So and she does get to a comic shop. I enjoyed this thoroughly. It's an undersized comic. I did pick it up. And I believe it came from, like I said, Silver Sprocket. You should be able to get it. I got mine through Discount Comic Book Service. But no self-respecting comic shop would be without it. So that's my first pick for today.
I've been reading. Joe, what kind of comic do you think that I'm reading?
Let's see. Something by Steve Ditko.
Or?
Jack Kirby.
That's right. I'm reading a Jack Kirby comic that is... never been in print before.
Ooh, have you been doing a little time slipping, time travel?
Has no, whole... I have picked up Jack Kirby's Dingbat Love.
Oh, what?
Which was put out by Two Morrows, and it has some unpublished 70s stories that DC never printed. Back when he was working at DC, he did he did four black and white magazines, only two of which were printed. So in this book, they have all the stories from True Life Divorce, which never was printed, Soul Love, which never was printed. Now, Joe, do you know what the two black and white magazines were that were printed?
From DC?
Yeah. By Jack Kirby. In the Days of the Mob... and Spirit World. And the unpublished stories from those kind of ended up in DC's what they called mystery comics, which were basically their horror books, but they didn't want to put horror on the title. But they had no place to put True Life Divorce and Soul Love. And then those... because DC shelved those, and they, in the 70s, DC was casting about, looking to find stuff that would sell. They were going back to what sold in the past. One of the things that sold really well in the past were what they called Kid Gang comics. Now, everybody knows the Little Rascals, right? Or Our Gang.
The one that Mo Sizzlax was in. He had a tailpipe gig that would really make you think.
They had the Bowery Boys, which Turner Classic Movies have been infesting their Saturday mornings with. And the Bowery Boys were around so long that Hunts Hall, who was kind of the only one who was in all of them, by the end of it, he was in his 40s, so not really a kid. But Jack Kirby and Joe Simon had a lot of success with the Boy Commandos, the Newsboy League. So they went to him and said, why not put together a kid gang? And he put together the Dingbats of Danger Street. The first issue was printed in DC First Issue Special, which was, well, first issues sell real well. Why don't we make a whole series of first issues? Gosh, that didn't work. The Dingbats of Danger Street were good looks, low fat, crunch, and bananas. And the first issue special did not sell real well, but Kirby had already drawn issues 2 and 3 and covers for the next one. So I read the second issue of the Dingbats of Danger Street, where they take on the slumlord assassin Snake Meat. Okay, not everything Jack did was good.
No, not after he left Marvel. Some would even argue the New Gods were hard to follow and hard to read, but boy, did DC make hay out of it. That's for damn sure.
This issue is basically a very cool action story. but it reads very much like something out of the 40s, which is probably why they finally just said, nah, we don't think it'll sell in the 70s. Kirby's art is fantastic, and in this Dingbat Love, they do a modern color job on it, and it's just beautifully colored. I'm kind of glad it was never printed in the 70s, because it would have looked like crap.
Crap. Don't worry, they would have brought in your favorite inker to take care of it.
No, at this point, Kirby had already put his foot down, and everything he did was inked by Mike Royer. So, but boy, there's the two-page spread. This was when Kirby would do a splash page and then a two-page spread. The two-page spread of everybody running away from, running away from a gunfight is just such a cool page, man. Full of action, looks like a slum in the 30s. It's very much a throwback issue, but I could see why DC kind of went, yeah, I don't think so. And at this point, Kirby had enough clout that he could say that he didn't need an editor. He needed an editor. Snake Meat is a terrible name for an assassin, okay?
I've had it with these MF snakes. No.
So that was one of the books that I read. Dingbat Love, I recommend, actually. I give it a thumbs up because of the historical context and also because it's got all this stuff you've never seen, including a lot of pencil art. And I don't know if these magazines would have worked. But man, Soul Love just looks beautiful. It's just a beautiful, beautiful book. And it's basically it's a romance book with the African-American characters. And Kirby, while Kirby was a little behind the times, he actually made this stuff look really cool. And the thing that I like about it, other than other 70s books aimed at African-Americans, he wasn't learning about how African-American talks by watching movies. He didn't have them talking about Jive Soul Bros. It was more just regular people talking about their lives. So, Joe, what's next on your list?
I think I might have reviewed this one before, but it's worth bringing up. Poop Man and Corn Boy. Not so ordinary citizens. Ralph Spadowski and Carlos Hernandez, a couple of plumbers who spend their days fixing toilets, eating tacos. But Ralph, after being exposed to a radioactive portable toilet, was transformed into Poop Man. Along with his sidekick, Corn Boy, the two find themselves saving the city from monster turds. Monster turds, you may ask? Yes. When the toilets and sewers are full, the turds will walk the earth. That was quoted by George A. Romero. Night of the Living Poop. Like so many stories, this one started in the can, and it started fast. As a morning whiz, one by one, turds were coming to life. How did it start? There's a lot of speculation thrown about as the cause to the poop being animated. Was it military chemical waste? Or maybe waste pollution was the cause? Some blame it on Mambi's tater tot hot dish that made the turds climb out of the toilet and walk the earth. Another theory was some ancient Egyptian curse that a grave robber had plucked the sacred mummified turd from King Tutankhamun's royal golden throne. Kind of far-fetched, huh? I mean, really, who mummifies their turds? Some were convinced it was an alien invasion. Some swore it was voodoo. Regardless, poop was really happening. Turds were leaving the toilet, getting up and walking around. And who had to come to the rescue? Why, Poop Man and Corn Boy. This was created by Jeff Felsen. And unlike the previous one, you can go to Fart Studios. That's FARZstudios.com. And quite possibly pick yourself up a copy. Good cartoonish art. Story's easy to follow. And I'm just getting to the end there. It is a done-in-one, so you're not going to be waiting up nights wondering, did our heroes prevail against these zombie turds? Which is good, because every time you deal with these smaller press, you never can be sure when or if the next issue will come out. I met these guys at one of the MCBA cons and picked up their book. The fun part is when you flip it over, there's another side. Cyberpunk 3000, a punk rock superhero for the cosmic age. Let's see. It's 1984. Punk rock is a thing. The ultimate rebellion for small groups of young people at this particular time. And one such person is 27-year-old punk guitarist Jane Lee. Frustrated with where she's currently at in her young existence, Jane spends most evenings working the night shift in perpetual, convenience store clerk drudgery. Get it? Perpetual convenience store clerk drudgery. She daydreams of someday becoming a punk rock hero. But little does she know that very soon the fate above is about to send her a cosmic sign in the form of a mysterious object that is alien tech that will bestow her with incredible powers, but also have her facing incredible adversary here on Earth, as well as on an oppressed alien cyber world nearly 3,000 light years away. Let's see if I can find the creator credits on this one. This is from Chad Jasper, who I must have met because I got both these guys to autograph this. And of course, this one's a little more less serious than the previous story. And unlike the other one, it is not done in one. I mean, the main story kind of finishes up, but it does end on a bit of a cliffhanger. And I have yet to find issue two, but like I said, you could always go right to their website and check it out. The art styles are different. Obviously, there's a couple friends who decided to get together and publish their own flip comic. So it is actually a kind of a treat to go from the two different extremes. Of the two, of course, Poop Man and Corn Boy is the stronger of the two stories, unless you happen to like your hero's more of a punk rock superhero. So I'm not judging. I'm just recommending. So head over to their website and you could probably score yourself a copy of this since at the moment, well, I have no idea when the next con is. I know MCBA has scheduled in their next con for October 10th, but we'll see if it happens or not. So what do you got, Mr. Strode?
Well, if you're going to torture me with a hero named Poop Man,
well, you know, you sit there and you know you're teaching us history. I mean, I want some good reviews.
Fine.
Mention how hard is it to get a hold of those dingbat stories?
I have a hero even worse than Poop Man.
Oh, I doubt it, but let's go.
Skate Man by Neil Adams. Skate Man is Billy Moon, who is a martial arts enthusiast and a Vietnam veteran who found a career in roller derby when he returned from Vietnam. However, because of the things he saw in Vietnam, he sank into a horrible, horrible depression. And the only thing that was able to pull him out of his depression was his girlfriend, Angel. Now, this being a superhero comic, we find this out in the middle. At the beginning, we just get Skate Man beating up a bunch of nameless thugs by skating around and punching them and kicking them with his roller skates. We then find out his backstory. But how did our roller derby depressed Vietnam vet martial arts hero turn into Skate Man? Well, a bunch of evil bikers kill his girlfriend, Angel. And Billy, whose best friend is a Hispanic teenager who he refers to as a beaner. That's not racist at all.
No.
And how, if Skate Man calls his friends racist names, imagine what he calls his enemies. But Paco, who also goes by the name Pigmeat, yeah, Neil needed an editor too, is a comic book enthusiast. And Billy looks through and decides that to get revenge on the biker gang, he will wrap a scarf around his head and become the hero Skate Man. This is Neil Adams. This is Neil fucking Adams. This is a guy who's thought of as an industry legend. In 1983, this book came out. 19 pages of this. 19 pages of this. And from Pacific Comics, they had not quite figured out the stuff on Baxter paper yet. So Neil colored this himself. And you do not want to read this outside without sunglasses because, oh my God, everything is so damn bright. Bright and red and primary colors. And it almost reflects the sun off the page into your eyes. Now, your story was a done in one, right?
The one half was, the other half wasn't. And the previous one was done in one.
This one is done in one as well. The last thing we say is Skate Man rescuing a girl named Jill, who's kind of become his the new angel, who had been kidnapped by the bikers. Why they killed Angel and just kidnapped Jill, I have no idea. It's not explained. It's almost like they're hunting down anyone that has anything to do with Billy Moon. We don't know why. They're evil bikers. But he's able to beat up the bikers, causes a massive explosion at the evil bikers' hideout, barely keeping ahead of the flames and shockwaves, while Paco cheers on from the sidelines. And then the word fini is at the bottom of the page.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So is it a graphic novel? Is it a pilot? I'll tell you this, Steve, the people who ran Pacific Comics pointed toward this as one of the things that caused them a lot of heartache because they literally had pallets of the goddamn book in their warehouse until they shut down. We signed Neil Adams to do a book. This will make us $100 quadrillion. If you see it in a quarter bin, pass on by because Baxter isn't very good at starting flames.
I would leave a quarter and continue on.
Yes. Yeah. You don't even buy it for kindling because if you try and light one of those Baxter books, they take forever to light up.
Yeah.
Joe?
Corey, have you ever thought a friend of yours might be a dolphin?
No, because no one I've ever known, when I say hi, goes...
Well, that's not necessarily true, because, you know, dolphins are smart. But fortunately, James the Stanton, out of Silver Sprocket of San Francisco, that's silversprocket.net, has written and illustrated a story that could help you. I think our friend Dan might be a dolphin. And it's a short, it's a mini comic, but it's very noticeable. And, you know, Dan is pretty convincing friend, but, you know, if you'll start to notice things such as blowhole stains when you run into him, you know, like if you have a Hot Wing City, you know, he'll try to pass it off as back sweat, but there's no mistaking a blowhole stain on the back of the shirt. You know, on the internet, blowhole stains are clothing are the number one reason for dolphins who think they're people to be discovered as just actually dolphins. There's a lot of other things too. When they get drunk, they might periodically shoot steam out of the collar of their shirts. It could explain why they always sound like they're sloshing around in a bathtub whenever you give them a quick call. They have trouble getting in cargo shorts. It seems obvious, you know, like if you catch him when he got caught in the net with all those tuna, or the time he got caught fucking that dolphin, you know, telling him not to clench the blowhole is kind of distracting, or the time, you know, when he dropped his camera and he instinctively caught it with his prehensile dolphin penis. Oh boy, Dan, a dolphin. How about that? Never saw it coming, huh? There's a lot of more going on, but it's a short comic, and I don't really want to tell you more. But if you think your friend might be a dolphin, if his name's Dan or not, you should probably run over G Nartoons, and it's a GNARTOONS on Instagram, Nartoon.com on the web. And you could pick yourself up a copy of, I think our friend Dan might be a dolphin. Lest you think this is not being taken seriously, the copy I have in my hands right here is a second print. So there is enough concern out there that your friends might be a dolphin. And, you know, you got to figure out what you're going to do once you know he's a dolphin. You know, these are questions that will be answered, and you won't have to worry because somebody else has took the worry out of it for you. And yeah, you may think, really, I'm going to spend money on that. Well, you've dropped $5 on stupider things.
You've spent $5 on a coffee that's basically a milkshake.
Yeah. So run and get yourself a copy here. Corey, you will not have to. Trust me, you will never worry again if your friend Dan might be a dolphin. Things we do for you here?
We know Dan's not a dolphin because he's Dangerous Dan Moore.
We don't know that for
he's
sure.
He's a grandfather.
Only Julie knows for sure, and she's not telling. Although I bet if we I bet
he doesn't
if we
listen to the show, so we can keep saying that over and over. He's a grandfather. And he's not happy about it.
Well, then he should have kept his Schwanzenstuckel in his prehensile tail. Yeah, whatever.
He's a step grandfather.
Yeah. But trust me, I'm more worried about what Wolfie thinks. Ah, well.
Joe, remember when generic food was around? Because now we have brands.
Yeah. This is before store brands. What did you walk in? And it was usually less than what a name brand would be.
Yeah.
And it's hit or miss on quality. I mean, sometimes it was like, oh, look, there's generic O's or whatever. It's basically a knockoff of Cheerios. Or it may be Cheerios just for whatever reason did not make the quality, so they sold them off. Or it may have been the exact same thing. They just, we'll box it this way and make money. We'll box it this way and make even more money. But like Corey said, now, like Target, what do they call theirs? Market Fresh or something. They have their own line, and Walmart has their own line. But it was
pretty much every grocery store has their own. Molto Meal now does like generic versions of cereals and bags and stuff. But back in the late 70s, early 80s, you had generic, and it would be in a white box with a black label that would just say like beer or black beans or chicken soup. After Marvel's series Crazy, which was their knockoff of Mad, got canceled, Larry Hama, who was the editor of Crazy, was still around Marvel, and they let him try every once in a while to do something, interesting and funny. And one of those things was the Marvel generic comic book. And it's a black cover with, I'm sorry, it's a white cover with black lettering saying generic comic book. And it says, this comic contains one neurotic superhero type with a variety of personal problems, one bad guy bent on world domination through arcane means, assorted villainous hench people, the hero's nefarious employer, pathetic family, and well-endowed girlfriend, a plot containing a conflict, a subplot, a resolution, a plot twist, and as many fights as it takes to fill up the rest of the pages. And it says, generic comic book type superhero action adventure. This was not published during Assistant Editors Month. What it is, Hama brought in Steve Skeets, who was one of the first fan-turned-writer. He mostly worked at DC. He's probably best known for his run on Aquaman, which should tell you something there, because, Joe, when you think 70s Aquaman, do you think, I really want to reread those? But he was brought over to Marvel Did a lot of time working at Carlton Comics. Over at Marvel, he actually wrote Peter Porker, the Spectacular Spider-Ham. This is a first issue, so it's got a origin story. The hero of the story is a young man hoping for a promotion at work so he can finally get married to his girlfriend and pay for the operation that his kid brother needs. His kid brother is in a coma, by the way. And the young man collects a lot of things that glow in the dark. Over the years, he collected too many radioactive items. As he has woke up one morning, his hair has turned white, and he has superpowers. And it goes from there. The art is pretty bland. I think they got Vince Coletta to ink it. Pause for laughter. there is a fight scene. There's he finds out that his boss was the bad guy. And that's the twist at the end of the story. And it ends with, of course, is this what being a superhero is all about? Is this the type of reality I'll have to put up with from now on? They do not list an artist. I have looked for years and years and years to find who the artist is, and no one has owned up to it. I don't know. I remember buying this because I thought, oh, that could be a funny joke. And the thing was, the story is a little too serious to be funny and a little too goofy to be serious. It's a one-note joke that would have been a really cool gag for five pages in Crazy, but stretched out over a 32-page comic book? Oof.
Yeah, you paid 60 cents for this thing.
Well, no, I got a discount.
Oh, okay. I was going to say.
I paid 54 cents.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, I had it on my subscription list, so I got a 10% discount.
What a guy.
Yeah, I know. The other sad thing about this is I've read some of the superhero books from the 60s from Dell and Archie and other small companies, and this is not that much different from those, except they were a little more campy, so they were a little more entertaining than this. If you remember generic food and all other generic stuff, you may get a chuckle out of this. Otherwise, it's just, remember on, you've watched Saturday Night Live over the years, when they've got a funny idea for a sketch and then it goes for 7 minutes. That's what this felt like. It felt like they had a funny idea stretched way too damn long. Joe?
Corey, you've got a son, right?
Yes.
All right. And we have you know what condoms are used for, right?
Obviously not.
Well, yeah, well, at least once. Twice for me.
No. We don't know what they're used for because once for me and twice for you.
Well, yeah, but
Wait, didn't you grow up Catholic? How do you know what condoms used for?
I don't, well, because I read Freak Brothers comics.
Oh, okay.
I learned all my sex education and drugs and things like that. But, so basically there's one, well, maybe two uses for a condom. Well, three if you count the incident. However, Apple Press, way back in 1991, has taken what could be an uncomfortable subject and put a lighthearted cast on it by publishing 101 other uses for a condom. It was an AIDS prevention special back in 91 with a stunning array of artists that illustrated their ideas for alternate uses for latex condoms. You get sketches from the likes of Fred Hembeck, Phil Folio, Don Lamax, Scott Liddell, Mike Grell. The front page is just a who's who of comic. William Michener, Loeb, I'm just kind of randomly looking through. Like use number one, a cake frosting dispenser. Use number 26, a horn protector for unicorns. Number 27, a fishing net for eels. How about number 34, a golf club cozy? Or number 36, a very small personal flotation device. Number 65, finally, a way to save that half-eaten banana. Number 27, keep sand out of the bore of M1 rifles, which was actually done by the U.S. military, by the way. Number 78, evidence bags for the DEA. Number 92, a nose warmer. Number 95, galoshes for a kitten. Do I need to go on, or should you just go out and find yourself your own copy of this? I mean, it's a lot of fun. Like I said, it's just got some amazing illustrations by some awesome creators. And you should be able to pick up copies fairly cheap because maybe not. I'm just looking at the price guide, and they say the Near Mint is $25. But I happen to know an eBay store, which shall remain nameless for now, that might have a few copies for a little bit less, if you know what I'm talking about. So if you're stuck, if you're like Corey and I, way past our college years, way past any chance of having any woman anywhere wanting to procreate with us, and you just happen to have a ton of condoms lying around, not that I'm saying Corey and I have that particular problem, well, pick up this book, because that is 101 other uses for a condom.
I'm going to stick with Marvel.
Well, after Skate Man, I think there's not much else left.
Because I found on Fred Hembeck's page some stuff around a almost famous book. Yeah, I'm going to give another history lesson. Joe, do you remember Fred Hembeck destroys the Marvel Universe?
I do, because I'm a major, major Fred Hembeck fan. So anything he comes up with, I am on it like Oprah on a canned ham.
Now, if you pick up the book, you will see that the first two pages and the last two pages are a framing sequence where the Punisher is out to get Fred Hembeck for creating a book where he kills the Marvel Universe. And it's drawn similar style, but the inking is different. The lettering is different. The coloring is different. The interior, the rest of the book, is about a new character, Crackers the Clown, who uses fate to kill every superhero and every supervillain in the Marvel Universe, usually in a humorous or ironic way. There's a lot of puns along the way. You get a lot of Fred Hembeck's obsessions as part of the jokes, such as the Monkees, the Beatles, 60s TV culture, things like that. Sadly, there is no Brother Voodoo sequence. But
happen. Are you kidding? Fred Hembeck loves Brother Voodoo. There is no way he would kill him.
And it in itself, if you see it in a back issue bin, well worth it, even if it is inked by Vince Coletta.
Which is fine, because the gags are well enough to make you ignore the inking.
Yes. And Fred Hembeck's style is pretty simplistic anyway, so it's not like it's not like Coletta. We go through and erase the squiggles on the knees. But back on Fred Hembeck's page, I don't know if it's even still there because I saved it years ago. He has the pages around the original version, which was much longer and had a deeper backstory. Settle back, Joe. It's time for some comics history.
Oh, hang on a second. I gotta just let's open this can of beer.
Story time.
Pour myself a. Oh, there we go. A nice cold one. All right, I am ready.
That doesn't sound like beer to me.
Okay, the Diet Mountain Dew, but I didn't want you to think less of me.
Well, it's not even noon yet, so.
Yeah, the caffeine's needed.
So, back when Doug Mensch left Marvel for DC, he gave a story to Kat Ironwood, who was writing in the Comic Buyer's Guide, on a, she basically had a column every week back in the early 80s called Fit to Print. And she was a big fan of Master Kung Fu, so her and Doug Mensch had become friends over the years. So when he, Doug Mensch left Marvel, he basically called her up and vented that basically he had a story that Jim Shooter was going to kill off most of the characters and have them replaced by younger versions.
I have never heard of anything like that ever happening before. I'm shocked, I tell you. I'll shut up now and drink.
And that's where the genesis of this story actually was. Fred Hembeck pitched a story to Jim Shooter saying, hey, why don't we do that? You know, it's a comedy bit. So the original framing sequence is Jim Shooter as editor-in-chief of Marvel has a green rock in his office that he got from an editor at a previous company he worked at. Jim Shooter used to work for DC and the editor was Mort Weisinger, but they never say that because that was Marvel's gag at the time. They weren't DC. They were the distinguished competition. One night the moon hit the green rock and turned Jim Shooter evil. He called up Fred Hembeck, and my favorite gag in it is where he says, we want you to kill all the characters in the Marvel Universe. Oh, I couldn't do that. That would be, you know, it would be horrible. All right, I guess we'll get Jim Starlin to do it. Because, you know, he killed off this character, and then the death of Captain Marvel went into four printings. So I guess Starlin's going to get himself a second Cadillac. Really? All that money? I'll do it! And then at the end of the sequence, it's a lot of the people working at Marvel come in, hey, you can't do this, blah, 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 blah. And we find out that this was Mort Weisinger's revenge on Marvel because Marvel eventually outsold DC. But finally, Shooter said he didn't want to put out a comic that had him as a main character. It was shoved in a drawer, and one of the things that Tom DeFalco did when he became editor-in-chief, he wanted all of these books that had been made over the years and paid for but never printed. He was like, yeah, we let's print these and at least get some money back out of them. So he had Fred Hembeck draw a new sequence where it was done by... it really is kind of a mess as to the framing sequence. The Punisher shows up and he's there to kill Fred Hembeck for drawing this comic. Well, Hembeck is living in a gutter because he drew this comic and lost so much money on it. And we find out that the Punisher was actually Stan Lee, who was just
spoilers! Spoilers! Oh my gosh! You just gave away the whole thing.
Joe, it's a 40-year-old comic.
Yeah, well, you know, just saying.
Who was just testing Fred Hembeck to see if he really loved Marvel? The guts of the story are really quite fun. Lots of funny sequences of the characters dying, but I really, really wish they would have had the original framing sequence because there was so many good inside jokes. such as a writer who, I want to do a story that speaks to today's problems. I want to do a story about Captain America having athlete's foot.
Dude, that's a scourge of superheroes everywhere.
So that's one, if you, you know, we've talked about comics that if you see them in the back issue bin, you should avoid. This is one in the back issue bin that, yeah, it's worth it. It's a lot of fun. If you weren't reading comics back in the 80s, you might go, uh-huh, what? But still, it's a lot of fun. Joe?
I am going to bring up something that you're lucky if you can find it in the back issue bins, because Lord knows I found it, and I don't think anybody else will be able. And I don't even know if the gentleman in question, and I'm just going to blast his name out there, even does comics anymore. I mean, this was done by, I didn't put his name in the book. Coward! Oh, I'm sorry. James J. Kohler, a.k.a. DK. He was out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin originally, and he came. I have two copies. Number one of The Masked Potato, and number two. And you know, if we're talking about, you know, finding it in the back issue bin, I'll tell you number one. If you find copies of The Masked Potato, number one, you should pick it up because it is hilarious. It came out in 93, so good luck finding it. And he only did 100 copies, I guess, and I got number 36. So, and he's just talking about, he's just doing it for fun because, and I'll just read right out of it. Now stay tuned to a spectacle you could always miss. Nah, from the man who brought you the incredible nothing, and they peel potatoes, don't they? Comes an epic struggle of good taste and bad characters so fierce that nobody wants to know about them. A guy so strong, so heroic, and just plain silly, comes a spud called the Mashed Potato. Out of the darkness he comes, because he can see better that way. He's not a bird. He's not a bat. He's the tuber of justice. You know, like a potato, for sure. But at this point in his life, he's not very happy potato. You see, the Mashed Potato used to have a partner called Johnny Tater that until Madam Whip captured him and turned him into Instant Potatoes. Now you can see him in supermarkets all across the country. However, a morning a potato will have to wait a reflex. And here's help me. I'm melting. Oh, sorry about that. Mine started to space out there meanwhile. But meanwhile, far below, a gang of people are doing not at all good things. And the Mashed Potato comes in and, of course, strikes for justice. The printing is what you'd expect from someone who's self-publishing. And what's fun is he packs a lot of jokes into the word balloons in that. So, example, after the first fight, and of course we get the inevitable reveal of the ultimate villain behind everything, the Mashed Potato sprouts as he's flying using, I don't know what he uses. He's kind of like Spider-Man, those 60s Spider-Man cartoons. Whatever he's winging himself across the city with, you never see what it's attached to. Down below, a kid looks up. Dad, look, it's Orson Welles. Can I get his autograph? No, son, not Orson Welles, but a very large potato wearing a cape. This is a super son. So the first issue goes on. There's quite a bit to it. There's a lot of reading. And it ends, well, it's kind of done in one, but it's done in one the way Star Wars is, because, of course, the villain gets away. And so we're eagerly awaiting the second issue. And it comes out about 2 years later. And in a dead alley, 2 weeks after the breach, in a story called Half-Baked. And, of course, the breach is explained later. And, of course, here comes the tube of justice. And he not only has a spiffy new costume and a better mask, but he's got wings. And he comes down and let's just say that DK was exercising his – when did this come out? 96. So he obviously was inspired a lot by – Image, because almost every page is a splash page, whereas before the first couple issues might have had has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 panels on it. This one had a lot of splash pages. You could tell his art's improved. He's using what's that stuff you call the little dots in the background?
Zip-a-tone.
He's using different shades of that. There's a fight sequence. There's a lot of splash pages explaining where the Tuber of Justice has been these last couple years. And it ends, unfortunately, on a I guess it's sort of a cliffhanger, but it's like, you know, a bad guy pops up and the Tuber is just mashed potato goes, looks like somebody needs a serious beating. And then as you turn the last page, you realize, howdy, I this is the boo-boo department. When I was getting the pages together for this book, one of the pages got misplaced and wasn't found out till it was too late to put it in. So this page goes in between pages 12 and 13. I a little more disappointing in this one because it's not as many jokes. There's a few good ones. He's getting a little more serious in it. Obviously, he was playing the image card because almost every single page is a splash page. There is a blurb for the next page, which is a real smash mouth, no holds barred, free for all between Amalgamo and the new and improved mashed potato. And he says, see you in 2 years. Much like Ms. Mystic, I don't know if there was ever a mashed potato number 3. He obviously had other stuff going because he does give an address, and I'm tempted to actually mail a card to him. But he's talking not only about the different mashed potatoes you can get from him, but also Buster Bunny and her Galactic Knockers. Yes, it's a hardcore issue for mature collectors. Steel Lace, regular ash can, and then there's a black and white color version. Steel Lace number 0, experimental trial edition with color highlight. Steel Ace number 0, alternative version. Yeah, he was really into the image stuff. So all I can say is if you can find copies of the Mashed Potato number 1, because like he said, he only did, he says 100 here, but in number 2, he says he either did 50 or 50 left. And number 2, not as much fun, not as many jokes, but they are now part of my beloved collection. And I will probably never, ever get rid of them. I'm getting a little hungry now with all this potato talk. Corey, what's next? Or I should say the final book in our review of comics.
Before we get to that, I have some history.
History! Hang on. I saved a little bit just because I knew you were going to slip somewhere in.
Joe, do you remember Amazing Heroes?
Yes, I do.
And do you remember the Amazing Heroes preview special?
Oh, we used to love those because you would get those and they would kind of tell you every book that allegedly was coming out in the upcoming year. And yeah, what's cool about it, and I think you've talked about, I might be stealing your thunder, but you know, you love picking those up because you read through them and you're like, well, that never came out. That never came out. I think next to the Amazing Heroes swimsuit issues, the preview issues are quite possibly some of the best things to pick up if you can find them.
So do you remember they had a fake book in every one? And if you wrote in and said what the fake book was, they'd send you something. I don't remember what it was.
I did not know that.
What was the name of the fake book?
I couldn't even tell you.
It's a potato.
What?
Yes. So this artist, what is his name?
DK.
DK, if that is your real name, and we know it is not.
And we have your address, at least as it was in 1996.
We are going to tell Fantagraphics about you stealing their idea, you thief, you no good, dirty thief. Now, Fantagraphics at the time, they were involved in a few lawsuits, one of which involved Harlan Ellison, and they had to make a lot of money to pay lawyers. That's one of the reasons they did Amazing Heroes. They picked up Amazing Heroes from a small publisher and started putting it out, and then when the lawsuit hit, they put it out twice a month because they thought, oh, you know, this will be a easy way for us to make some money. And then Wizard came along, which was slicker and had more art in it, and was
and gave you free comic books, and you could mail away stuff, and you could run to your local comic store and pick up the books that they say were hot.
That was the other thing. Whereas Amazing Heroes pushed, here's the, you know, they would have interviews with creators, but they would also have like hero histories, and here's everything you need to know about Cloak and Dagger. Here's everything you need to know about the Punisher. Wizard was just, here's the books that are going to be hot. So Amazing Heroes went away, and Fantagraphics still needed to find a way to make some money. So they did what Shinders did, and they started to publish porn. So, Joe, the next book on my list is Wendy Whitebread, Undercover Slut by Anton Dreck.
Wait a minute. I think this has gone on long enough. Yes, they're legitimate comics, but this episode's just not working for me, Corey.
You don't want me to talk about how she wore a thong with her badge on it because she was a virgin?
I remember that because that was one of the things that he may call himself Dreck, but
Anton Dreck.
That was our good buddy Don Simpson from Megaton Man and Border Worlds, and I think didn't our old friend David Watkins talk a lot? He told us about this trend to comics because that was a lot of ways the only way you could make money.
Yes.
Doing this, and I think this is done. Maybe we should just shelve this one and not use it and come back next week with some real comics and stuff.
But what about these guys, our sponsors? Believe it or not, kids, this here podcast has sponsors. And that sponsor, since day one, is DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host in the whole known universe. And if you need a website, head on over to DreamHost.com, put in code CRAZY, that's K-R-A-Y-Z, and get $20 off your first year. Now, if you would like to advertise here on any of the Solitaire Rose Network podcasts, you can just email me at SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. Also, head on over to eBay and look for user Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z, that's Joe Crazy Writer, who's always telling us about the eBay in every episode of Crazy Comics and Stories. If you would like to contact us, you can do so. You can give us a call at 952-856-0519. Leave a message and we'll play it on the show. Or you can send us an email at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks.
Well, yeah, you got it. You know, that's the number one rule in radio and podcasting. If you got sponsors, the show must go on.
Okay, fine. We'll shelve this one. But I've got all these other podcasts I do. The Solitaire Rose Podcast Network is filled with all kinds of audio goodness. First, there's Crazy Comics and Stories. It's been going since 2010. It drops every Monday, and it has me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, and Joe Crazy Writer, talking comics, shenanigans, and whatever we're freaking and geeking about. Every Monday morning. It's been going since 2010, and it's available at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. Also on that same feed is the Solitaire Rose Podcast, which is me, again, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, doing interviews, talking about comics, talking about comics history, pretty much talking about whatever I want to talk about. We've also got Solo Joe, where Joe Crazy Writer does a solo podcast. And he hasn't done one in a while, so kick him in the shins to get him started. We also, on that same feed, have Solitaire Rose Series and Review, where we do DVD commentary of older comic book series. That's all at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. I also do a podcast with Wolfie B. Bad at badadvice.solitairerose.com, where we take listener questions and give them bad advice. There's also Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's at novels.solitairerose.com. There's also Fantastic Forecast, where myself and Adam Vermillion are going through the entire run of the Fantastic Four, four issues at a time. That's fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com. And if you think that I'm on all of these podcasts, you're wrong, because Scrabbling Across the West is at scrabbling.solitairerose.com, where musician Dave Coffell and his wife Stephanie travel across America and then sitting down to play Scrabble and talk about the day. That's at Scrabbling Across the West, scrabbling.solitairerose.com. There are always more podcasts at the Solitaire Rose Podcast Network. Be there. Aloha. And now, you know, who's going to talk about what's going on the eBays?
Well, you know, I could just, rather than talk about, you know, the fact that I'm eBaying, which I am, you know, because Cray, R-A-Y-Z, I've been spending a lot of time doing that because now, you know, I'm home from my job. And so I've been able to go through and just find some really, really cool things and put them up. But also, I do give in to the temptation and I do buy things occasionally. And I just thought, you know, let's see if I can find that. Like, I picked up some 10 Ultra Pro 9 Pocket trading cards, mainly because I can't get to any of the stores that I normally buy my supplies from. I bought some Echo Swift packing carton tape because I use it for my eBaying, of course, and you can get it cheap. Again, same reason. I don't know what's going on, but boy, I go to the different stores I go to get packing tape, and they're sold out. I wonder if more people are eBaying now than ever before. One place I do like, there's a place called Audio Print out of Australia that do really great pre-printed stickers, little tiny ones that say $5, $1. I use those a lot when we did our charity booth because I'd slap prices on comics and stuff. So I picked up some of those. The last thing I picked up is a it's called a vintage 1978 Bob Wright Fantasy Femme Art Superhero Supergirl drawing sample. And my guess is by the letter that wasn't included, but it was said that the guy who was selling these off, let's see, goes, blah, blah, blah. Thanks for writing. I'd like to work something out with you. Here's a couple pieces together as a tryout. And so the guy selling these had a pile from this creator, Bob Wright, and doing just different superheroes and different scenes. And he happened to have one of the 70s Supergirl flying that I like so much. And so I decided to pick that up. I've talked about before, you know, he had them up for a certain price and I gave him an offer and he counter offered. And I said, yeah, let's do it. It's a nice little piece. You can see it, of course, if you go to my Facebook page, look under my albums and you can see, I have an album called My Supergirl Art with all my stuff listed there. And it's one of the later ones because I just posted it while back, but I have no idea who Bob Wright is or who this Bruce is or Marty or whatever, but it's a nice piece of artwork. And, you know, I'm keeping my eyes open, see if there's any other things. So I too am prone to want to buy things off the eBays. A couple other things that were really weird is somebody gave me a neutral feedback. Corey, you know the three feedbacks that a buyer can give a seller, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It negative, which means he totally botched it. And people, I haven't had a lot of negative feedback because most people are at least willing to work with me. But this guy gave me a neutral feedback because he said the bag and board were dirty that he got his comic in. And I'm kind of like, well, let's see. I ship him in a cardboard box, so, and it got dirty. And I was going to respond and apologize, but then I noticed the other feedback he gave some other person was the same thing. Cardboard was dirty. And I'm like, wow, this guy's got some mental defects going on or something. And you know the best thing you can do with people like that, Corey?
Ignore.
And block.
Yeah.
So I just blocked them. Not everybody's kind of crabby on eBay. I did get one from a gentleman that goes under Cycle Spoiled Little Bronx Biatch 7779. And he had bought Crime Suspense Stories number one, the Russ Cochran EC reprint via 1992. And every time I send something out, I send a little note, and on the back is a flyer for our con, and I always autograph it and stuff. And it says, thanks so much for the note and pick. It was so cool. I'll buy from you again soon. You guys are the best. As long as you keep selling horror comics, I'll keep buying. It was nice to take time to introduce yourselves. Nice to see who I purchased my stuff from. I love horror, so if you have any more, let me know. So that was kind of a nice little thing. So just a couple miscellaneous eBay things that I just thought I'd share with you, Corey, rather than put on the podcast. But, you know, you should go look too. K-R-A-Y-Z. If you see something you like, I'll give you a deal on it too. I might even bring out that old credit book and just send it to you.
No!
Depending on what it is.
I doubt you still have the credit book.
You trust me. Some of the stuff I've got is amazing. Like I said, I still have it. I thought, was it two podcasts ago? I talked about the pile of papers that I pulled out. No, it was the last podcast we did. And I haven't even gone through those
yet.
That
was a fill-in podcast.
It was?
So people may hear that. You know, months from now.
Whatever. Yeah. No, it was just funny. So,
you take off and go up north and leave me here stranded all alone under quarantine.
Yes.
Wearing a mask.
Dude, I've seen your place. You've got more things to do than most mortals.
Everybody else. Oh, I've been home so long. I'm starting to get bored. I've seen everything I want to see. Stuff just keeps stacking up. Netflix keeps coming out with new series. And now we've got Peacock from Universal. And it's screw you all. Screw you all.
Should we just do some freaking and geeking just for the hell of it?
I'm just mad about that. I am mad about the fact that there's all this. I took Thursday, Friday off. And because the group home, the girl at the group home who has trouble falling asleep, she's now been told by her doctor she has to try to sleep at night. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, she's starting fights all night long. The one that woke me up Thursday night, 3 in the morning. 3 in the morning, I hear people shouting upstairs. And I go upstairs, and she's just shouting, I want to take a shower now! And the staff is, it's 3 in the morning, and I'm the only one here. I haven't been trained on how to help you with that. But I have to take a shower on Friday! So I have to calm her down. I get home, and I look at, I wear a Fitbit, and it says, you got 3.5 hours of sleep. And then on Fridays overnight, they moved me to another cottage because they literally had no one to work in that cottage. And normally I would be able to sleep there. However, there's only one client there because the others are in the hospital because of the COVID-19. She has recovered and is back, but has trouble sleeping and will wake up. Like about every half hour, 45 minutes. And if you don't tell her it's still nighttime, she will get up. She has trouble walking but doesn't realize it. So it's a safety thing. So I had to be up Friday night. And I got home and slept because I had to turn around and be back at work at 2 p.m. on Saturday. The only good thing about having to be up all night is, Joe, I have mixed both of our fill-in podcasts. They are sitting out on the server right now. All I need to do, if we ever need a fill-in, Normally, mm-hmm. if I have to do a fill-in, it's like, okay, I need to mix this and get it done. Nope, they're all mixed. If I need to do a fill-in, all I need to do is change the name and create a post. Boom, done.
That's pretty sweet.
So I'm pretty happy about that, but man, I was exhausted yesterday. When I got home last night, hey, it's Saturday night. I'm home at 10:30. So I am just, I'm such a wonderful, the excitement never stops, but I jumped in on your freaking, didn't I?
No, that's okay. Cause I got a couple things that just, what was the last podcast we talked about? It was what? Beautiful weather, 70 degrees outside. And right now we're hunkered indoors with a freeze warning. It's been getting below freezing the last couple of days. It's actually snowed in parts of Minnesota. And we had the fishing opener. My friends are sending pictures of, oh my God, it's snowing. Could be worse. We could be getting one of those nuclear snowstorms like parts of the East Coast are getting. But, that's the thing about Minnesota. Anything changes.
Anything goes.
I think I am finally done with my essentials, trying to pick them up.
Oh, you're not going to try and get that Warlock Essential that's going for over $150
now? Yeah. Well, and that's kind of it. I mean, one of the things I got off of eBay that I picked up the Essential Tomb of Dracula Volume 3. So now I've got all four of them, and I got a pretty good price on it. And I got one more, and I'll talk about it. Well, we'll do some geeking. Yeah, you know, I always like to leave them happy. The ones that are remaining are the price of a freaking omnibus. And even the Tomb of Dracula, I was real tempted because I was like, I should just sell the four and go get the color omnibuses, which I still may do. I like having them because, like I said, I'm more of a physical media guy. It's kind of cool to have them, even though I do have access to Marvel Unlimited. So if I want to read Spider-Man or I want to, share with my daughters, you should check these early ones out. If I really like them, like the Ditko run, I will probably pick up the Omnibus. In fact, I don't know if I ordered it or not, or maybe it was the Epic collection. But I'm pretty much done with the Essentials. Time to move on. The other thing that was weird, and I was curious what you thought about it. I saw that there was a comic company putting comics in the Walmart, middle grade comics from Allegiance Arts and Entertainment. And it was weird is when they put them in, they're supposed to be in the books, not up front, like where the current comics are with, in collectibles or whatever. And, they're all like, oh, this will be so cool. Not, I don't know if they're all readers, but they're kind of aimed at smaller kids. They're $4.98, 24 pages, heavy paper. And everybody's like, oh, this is so good. This will help people get your comics and blah. And everybody online is like, oh, this is going to be the magic pancreas and everything. And I'm like, no, it isn't. There's nothing that's going to make the comic industry rebound. It's a dying dinosaur. It's always going to be around. Will Eisner talked about that years ago, and this was probably back in the 80s when people were talking about, oh my God, comic books are dying. And he said, no, somebody's always going to make comic books. I mean, look at some of the stuff we reviewed. The Masked Potato. I think our friend Dan might be a dolphin. Poop Man and Corn Boy. No Romance in Hell. We may not have Marvel Comics or DC Comics, which will suck because that's the backbone of comic shops. But there will always be comics. But I don't buy that just because we got comics in the Walmart that they're going to be hot. Comics were in Walmart at one time till one person complained about something and they yanked them all. Because that's how these big corporations act. We got one person offended in God knows where America. Just because they're in comics or in Walmarts doesn't mean anything. Millions and millions of people see the Avengers or Wonder Woman or, I don't know what they're doing with Black Widow. I saw the Call of the Wild movie, the Harrison Ford was going to be in that Chris and I wanted to go see in the theater. It's now on DC streaming. But I think they're saving Black Widow in case theaters pop up again. But, you know, it doesn't translate into comic book sales. And it's just a little, I get real tired of being the negative Nelly, because all these people are like, this is the lodestone. Comic books are in Walmart. Yeah, well, the DC ones may be going to people that never collect them before. I suspect they're going to people like you, Corey, and me to a certain extent, that are going because we know their new stories.
And I really like the format.
That was something I was thinking about, too. Maybe the format of comic books should change. Instead of this little floppy pamphlet we get every month for $3.99, maybe they should be square-bound, more book-like, and bump the price up. I don't know if people would accept comics in magazine formats, but if they all went to magazine formats, because I think the comic book is an anachronism of publishing. Nobody else publishes stuff like comic books. It's kind of like trade paperbacks. They used to be small things you could put in your pocket. Now they suddenly bumped up to a little bit bigger, but the price point went from $8 to $15. And people are still buying them. Maybe that's what comics need. They need to just abandon this floppy format. Not full-on graphic novel, but if you're still going to do the periodicals. So I don't know. It's just maybe I'm too down on it. And I'm not down on it. I mean, we've been doing this podcast for 10 years and 450 episodes. I love comic books. I just don't see anything making it come back as a mass market consumable the way they were. There's too much else out there. And my kids are a perfect example. Now that they're adults, they're not willing. If I come up to them and I say, hey, guys, check out this great issue of Romance in Hell. No Romance in Hell. Yeah, whatever. I mean, I gave my my daughter's boyfriend my first Walt Simonson Thor because he was really into Thor. I said, oh, you got to read these. These are great. He has yet to read it. You know, I gave my buddy some Incredible Hulk because he really likes Hulk out of the Avenger movies. And while he'll read them. He's a football guy. So now with the draft picks going on, all the comics get put aside. So they're just a, how would you say it? Do it when you think of it, media. You know, guys,
media.
Yeah, guys like you and me who we want our weekly fix or monthly fix or whatever. There were a dying breed. Boy, that was depressing as hell. Should we talk about some fun stuff?
Well, I still have some stuff I'm freaking on. First off, with that, 24 pages for $5.
Again, that may work for mom and dad who don't know any better, who are buying the kids. Mommy, I want to buy this. But yeah.
Okay, 24 pages for $5, whereas the DC are 100 pages for $5.
And the DC
are on really nice paper.
And they're using the, what do they call it, 70-pound paper. So yeah. These might be really nice as well. But
I went to the Walmart just for these and to find you a copy of Our Fighting Forces, which I found two of. So you get one, the second one.
Cool.
But I went to the toy section and I went to the book section. It wasn't in either one. I will say that Walmart has started to put the mass market paperback books back. There for the longest time, both they and Target were shrinking that section. In the 90s, they had a really nice big section. Then it got smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And now it's starting to grow again. So I'm wondering if the mass market paperbacks are having a little bit of a comeback. Mitt Breitweiser is an artist whose work I enjoy, but he himself has made a lot of problematic statements. Marvel has closed their sales for buying digital comics from them directly on their website. Now you do have to go to Comixology to order to buy Marvel digital books. So remember the little code you had in the Marvel books for your free digital comic? That now goes to Comixology. They shut down that site really with next to no notice. So I don't know what happened there. That's a little weird. And also, when comics come back, not all Marvel comics will be printed.
Oh, yeah. That would annoy me to no end.
Marvel has announced that there are some comics that when they come back, these books will now only be printed digitally. And the books are Ant-Man number 4, Avengers of the Wasteland number 4, Ghost Spider number 9, Ravencroft number 4, 2020 Ironheart number 1, Marvel Spider-Man the Black Cat Strikes, that's a toy tie-in, Hawkeye Freefall number 5, and Star number 4. These are all also in trade paperbacks that have already been solicited. So what I imagine is that the sales were so low and people are able to make the final order cutoff changes. They just got cut off to the point where wouldn't be profitable to print them. They've already got them done. They're already produced. So here they are digitally and they'll be in the trade. But that's not a good sign. The other thing I am freaking on is, again, there's all this stuff that's coming out for free that I have not had time, and most of it's for limited time. There have been 3 different Baby Metal concerts on YouTube that have, we're putting these up for the weekend for free. Well, I'm working all weekend, so Monday, finally. Oh, it's been removed. Son of a bitch. Shit. God damn it. Or the Benedict Cumberbatch stage version of Frankenstein or all this other stuff. So some good stuff has happened. Joe, what's some good stuff that's happened with you? What are you geeking on?
I had mentioned the Essentials. There are the Punisher ones. I picked up one just because it had a lot of the stuff that I've never read or never collected. And then it goes into, I believe it was the Mike Zeck run, which I remember reading and collecting, but not a lot of what was going on. So those are fairly cheap. I did pick up number 2 from an old friend, Mike Rittenhouse. Mike owns Hero House Comics down in Indianapolis, Indiana. 1112 East Prospect Street. You can check out his Facebook page. I don't see if he has a real page. I know he's been doing like auctions on stuff. He just did one of those gold Mandalorian figures. I guess they call them copper from Target exclusive, which I missed. Otherwise, I would have bid on it. But I took a page out of our playbook, and I gave him a quick text and I said, "Hey, I'm looking to fill some essentials. What you got?" He had number 2 Punisher. So I told him, let's do that. When I called him to give him my Visa card, I also picked up a few more of the Alan Moore DC Swamp Thing books that I don't have. Because, again, one of those, like, well, I have 3 of them. Do I want to switch to the Absolutes? Or, wait to the trades. Because that's a run that's definitely worth picking up. So I picked up some stuff from him. Again, if you want to get a hold of him and then just say, "Hey, guys from Crazy Comics called and want to see what you got." I mean, he's got a beat up Uncanny X-Men number 1 for about $1,000. Let's see, what else did he say? He's got a Green Lantern 76 for $650. So if you really want to make his day, otherwise, just give him a call, 317-636-7990. Hero House Comics, Mike is his name. He's also the guy who does the I can't think of the Star Trek tribute band, Five-Year Mission. Yeah, where they've done songs based on the various Star Trek episodes. And their CDs might be available either from him or through Kickstarter or whatever. So, like I said, put your money where your mouth is, and I did. Not everything is I'm selling on the eBays. I found a Facebook group called Minnesota Toy Posse. I don't know if you're part of it, Corey. Yeah. But their big their big thing is they sell things to other members of the posse. He also puts on various shows when they're not under restrictions, which are a lot of fun, just really cheap shows. Tons of dealers, tons of fun things. I try to get to them, even if I have to go to work. I can usually go spend an hour browsing through everything. I have a couple bigger toys that would be a pain in the butt to try to sell on eBay's. So in the under Minnesota Toy Posse, MN Toy Posse, I posted a couple toys, and somebody real close by said, "Hey, if you want to deliver it," and I said, "Yeah, I'm more than willing to drive over, and you know, if you PayPal me, I'll drop it on your doorstep." In this case, we just did a quick exchange. She gave me cash. She took the toy, and oh, apparently she bought it as a surprise for her husband. And he was thrilled with it because she sent me pictures that he not only took this expensive toy set, which he got a tremendous price for. It was a PX San Diego Con, PX being Diamond Comics, San Diego Comic Con exclusive with the original Ghostbusters slimed in a huge collector box. It's, you know, usually you buy a collector box like that, you don't open them. Well, he did. And he has them on his mantle, and she's like, "Yeah, that's not going to go anywhere until he's dead or we move." So that was kind of fun. There's another group, a national group called the Toy Posse, or just Toy Posse. So you could join either one of them on the Facebook. So I may try some other things like that. I've been getting some fun things in the mail. I got Dreamhaven Comics and Books catalog number 299. And he's got some really cool things in there. And I may have to decide if I want to spend some money on, and I probably will. So if you're interested in getting the catalog, give them a quick call, dreamhavenbooks.com. Google the name. I mean, his website will come up. He's on Facebook. And Greg, of course, damn fine, handsome man. I also got a copy of Jim Ross, the voice of wrestling.
Oh.
My life. In the WWE and beyond, under the Black Hat signed edition.
So is that the new one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Premier Collectibles. It's if you're on Facebook and you hit wrestling, it comes up every so often. And I paid extra to get the signed one. So I have his autograph. I can't wait to read that. Let's see. Having read things, I've read a couple things. The first one was a book called Last Train to Paradise, about Henry Flager and the spectacular rise and fall of the railroad that crossed the ocean. Back when I actually took a vacation, what was it, January, February? I think it was February. I'm glad I did. We went down to visit my folks who hibernate in Hobe Sound for the winter. And of course, they came back and they're fine. But we went down to West Palm Beach where Henry Flager has a museum. Henry Flager is like the... He was one of the guys in Standard Oil. He was actually the, if you listen to Rockefeller, he was kind of the brains behind everything. So all the dirty shenanigans and the things that Standard Oil is and Rockefeller are kind of, what would you say, looked down upon for doing back in the Gilded Age. Henry Flager was the one who thought of him, but Henry got away from the negativity because when he made his billions and left Standard Oil, he went to Florida and
billions.
Well, he spent billions practically building Florida into what it is today by running the railroad down, not only through the swampland, connecting it to Miami, but into the Keys, allowing development to start on a lot of those property. And of course, this is long before, environmental laws. And, you know, he had his own fair share of setbacks, but he spent a lot of money. made hotels. It got to the point where you could, in a course of a couple of days, go from New York all the way down to Key West, hop a steamer and get over to Havana, Cuba, which at the time wasn't, communist Cuba. So, you could do this traveling. Just amazing. The railroad got wiped out by a hurricane in 1935 to the point where it never was viable again. However, if you've ever seen True Lies, Remember the end of it when they're fighting over these two bridges? And yes. Well, one of the bridges happens to be the remains of the railroad bridge, which is so damn well built, it'll probably stay there forever. Much like the Roman aqueducts. It's not used, although there is plenty of the roadbed that it was used. So to this day, there's still remnants of Henry Flagler's generosity, and that he just built Florida. The museum's a testament to that. It's one of his old mansions that got turned into a museum courtesy of his granddaughter. I blurbed about that, I think, when we went and came back. And this is just one of many books. I just picked it up cheaps on the eBay. And it was kind of an interesting story because I knew the hurricane wiped it out, but this actually brings it up. You don't realize what a high cost in lives it costs, not only from other hurricanes, but from mosquitoes and from just bad work environment, things that would never happen today. But, so if you ever go check out Key West, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. And I finally read my copy. I don't know if it's Menage a Trois or if it's supposed to be Trois, but it's the from Udon Entertainment, UDON Entertainment.com. It's a just a fantastic book following the lives of comic book geek Gary and his two way hotter than he is roommates. This is a cross between Archie's meets Three Company with plenty of sex. Not the underground gratuitous sex, but the 90% of what these characters are doing are trying to figure out who's going to bed the other one. And it's done in a very the art is good. The way I say it is that I can see a character and know instantly who it is without having to figure it out. And it's one of those where you almost want to start. This is book 5, which I just picked up. Book 1 through 5 are available. Again, call your comic store to get them. And you want to start with 1 because it's interesting to watch how everything progresses. And, like I said, what's kind of sad is this is the last book of this particular saga. And the characters do go on because the story and art is done by Glace LaGrace and more story by David Lundstrom. Glace does write about where some of the characters go on to other web strips and other collections. So we haven't seen the end of it. I mean, I was kind of bummed because I read it. I'm like, oh, this is the last collection. But again, if I want, I can go online and find more. And I actually have seen a few movies. Corey, did you do anything for May 4th?
I worked.
I sort of worked. I watched episode 1.
Oh!
Phantom Menace. Yeah, my goal...
Featuring Darth Jar Jar.
Jar Jar Jar! My goal is to go to watch the whole thing. And I'll probably throw in Solo and Rogue One as well. And just watch the entire thing. I probably won't. I've never watched Clone Wars. I'm going to save that for later. But, and of course, because it was that or the holiday special, I've done my decade penance for that. So, but I decided to start with episode 1. And it's got good points. I mean, I actually wrote a bunch of things down, questions that I had. And a lot of them I found out either by watching the movie or going later on Wikipedia or things like this. One of them was like, why the hell did the Trade Federation pick Naboo? And it was basically Darth Sidious' scheme. It was his whole scheme in that. I keep thinking I would love to see more Qui-Gon Jinn, although I have no idea if Liam Neeson would care. It was fun to see the Jedi in their prime. I did go to Google and find out what happened to Jar Jar Binks. It does tell you where he ended up. Although I do like Cartoon Network's Robot Chicken version better. A couple things that are still confusing, because the mother says that there was no father.
Yes.
And in one of the comics, they revealed that Darth Sidious manipulated midichlorians to conceive Anakin. And that made a lot of news because at the time those were considered canon. However, Lucasfilms has said, yeah, no, that's not true. Not true. So we still don't know. There's a couple other things. And one of them, somebody gave me a fan fiction version of it. Like R2-D2 basically wrote the entire, it was there for the entire Skywalker saga. And he never once thought to say to like Obi-Wan, yeah, you remember me. I palled around with you the entire Clone Wars. And I also, you know, there's also fun things to the movie. Like when we, a bunch of us went to Toys R Us to get the toys being opened up for the first time. Because Phantom Menace, everybody was waiting to see this. We couldn't wait. Yeah, we could have. But I also remember when Palpatine at the end goes, we should watch your career with great interest. And the whole studio went, ooh. I did qualify. I did get myself ready to watch episode one, though. I had myself some really bad cider and my pork rinds. I eat pork rinds because there are no carbs. So, it was good. Speaking of movies that my wife and I are watching the Indiana Jones, and we did watch Temple of Doom. Oh, I tried, Corey. I really tried. I went through it, but boy, halfway through it, when they're getting into the whole, let's see how bad these guys are by torturing this, and I was like, wow, that really dragged on. And once you get to the point where Indy breaks loose and starts freeing the kids, and it gets better towards the end.
The mine car chase is one of the most amazing sequences in any movie ever.
It is fun, but there was just it started just. I know what Lucas was going for. He was going for the old serials that he probably grew up watching in the movie theaters. But and they always just started, you know. And that's kind of. But this starts out. I mean, we see a guy die that's had many adventures with Indy. Short round. Who is he? Where is he? Why haven't we seen him? Who's this chick? Where'd she go? It was just a hot mess, but we went through it and we were both kind of like, my wife and I were like, ugh. So the next day we watched Last Crusade, which was much, much better. Still, you know, no Karen Allen, no explanation of Short Round, but in and of itself, it was a much, much better movie. Although there was one thing that you wondered, because there was a point when they were sitting in their sidecars when Indiana was talking to his dad. And Indiana was like real skeptical about going after the Grail because the Nazis wanted it. And I'm like, dude, you just saw what the frickin' Ark of the Covenant did to all the Nazis. You would think, yeah, this is something we don't want the Nazis to have. You would think somewhere along the line, he would say, Dad, I agree with you. I found the Ark of the Covenant. Although that might have sidetracked the movie.
Yeah.
You'd like to think they had that discussion maybe afterwards, especially at the end of the movie, you kind of figure they must have had some time together. And that we're probably going to watch the fourth one tonight because I haven't watched that since I saw it in the theater. And I know they're working on another one. I hope they answer some of the questions. Maybe they did in the comic strips, or maybe I don't know if they did in the TV show with the younger Indiana Jones.
No.
But yeah.
It was very much its own thing, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah. I just, you know, it'd be nice to just cover up some of these things. We did close out the night by watching Blazing Saddles. Whoa, you're not big on that. Okay, how about if you go to Netflix and check out an original comedy event, Steve Martin and Martin Short, An Evening You Will Forget for the Rest of Your Life.
I have seen that one.
Oh, that was fun. And it would have been more fun to actually have seen them in person, but this was just a lot of fun, and you could tell they were having fun. And it's on Netflix now. One of my first concerts ever was Steve Martin way back. I think it was 78, 79 at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds. It was right after the controversy in his second album because he used the F word. And even he was on stage. Could you believe it? We used it in my first album and nobody said nothing. But in the second one, everybody got upset. And my album was banned from Kmart, which was weird because the third one was, which had Effenheimer's in it, was allowed. So back then, though, that was a big deal because Kmart was like Walmart is now. It was a major part of your sales. Steve didn't care. He was played the banjo sitting on this on the stage. Hey, I get paid for doing this. Oh, it was a fun concert. Finally, I'm on Twitter again.
Oh, you finally figured out your password.
No, I stopped my first one because I never used it. And I think I re-signed up or maybe I did figure out my password. But if you're interested in joining, I'm not advertising that I'm following or that I'm there. But if, you know, maybe I'll mention this in a future podcast. I would love to have just people who are listeners of the show be a follower of mine on Twitter, because on Facebook, what drives me crazy. I don't know how your Facebook fans are on Twitter, Corey, because I don't see everything you post. It's like the only reaction I ever get is when I make political posts. When I make comic book posts, I don't get any reaction at all. And usually the political posts are just right wing people disagreeing with me, which is like, that's fine as long as you're respectful and don't just fake news. But it would be so much fun to have some people follow me that actually want to talk comic books. So if I post things about comic books, I can actually.
Comic books are too political.
Yeah. Good luck with that, buddy. I don't know how your mix is on Twitter, Corey. What do you use your Twitter for? Do you, or are you more Instagram?
I use Twitter here and there. Mostly I follow people. I will post some funny stuff. I post links to the podcast. It's kind of a mess.
Yeah, I want mine. I'll invite our listeners to join me. Joe, in quotation mark, crazy writer. That's how you know it's me. Same thing on Facebook. If you're a listener to the show, send me a link. Again, I'm left wing, so if you're right wing and you can't handle it, don't. But you know, it'd be fun to just have some people to comic book talk on. I had people that used to talk comics, but they've all just kind of drifted away. All I got left is you, Corey. Boy, I'm going to finish my Mountain Dew while you tell me what's going good on your side. What are you geeking on? What's going good on your side of the world?
One of the things that I want to point out, for all the crap that people give Guy Fieri, you know, the Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives guy, mm-hmm. and there are times he deserves it, there are two things that he does that I really, really like. First is, if you watch Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, it's all these small little restaurants, you know, little like mom and pop places or, you know, single owner places. Here in Minnesota, that's how I found Psycho Susie's, a place I love. They've done Al's Breakfast, I think it is, that I've never been able to get into. It's that little restaurant down in Dinkytown that seats like 10 people. But he's always highlighting just small restaurants. Well, during the pandemic, he has done a bunch of fundraisers, including a special show on Friday nights where he will have some of his friends who've been on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. They'll show how to make their signature dishes, and he's doing it for fundraising. He has raised $20 million for out-of-work restaurant employees. And for all the crap people give him, and if you've been to his restaurants, they're garbage. You know, they're hot garbage.
We say that in a loving way, because, you know, maybe you just want some hot garbage.
Yeah, there are times you want a Fritos pie or whatever. But he's doing the right thing. And I think it's really cool that more and more people are kind of stepping up. You know, the economy is in free fall. And for all the talk of, we need to open things up, there are places that are opening up and people are going because they don't feel safe.
I just read one of that where some place opened and they're, even though they opened, they're still going to, they're like, we're not going to make it.
Yeah.
Because regardless of what you say, oh, we got to open, we got to get the economy going, there are still, what is it, 60 to 70% of us, and I'm one of them, that are like, I'm not ready to go. I don't feel safe. I'm high risk. You know, I barely want to go to Target. I mean, Corey and I are planning a geek day, and I still don't know if I'm going, because if shit's happening, I'm staying home. You know, I mean, Corey works in a house where people may get this, and I'm going to go pal out.
They have gotten it.
And I can't risk. I'm dying to do something. I didn't mention it in freaking, but I'm getting stir crazy because I'm doing really good on eBay. And when I do really good on eBay, that means I got money to burn. And I got things. I just want to go digging. I miss digging through comic boxes. I miss just looking for stuff, but I can't risk it. And you know, the last time you and I were talking about geeking together, I bailed because I wasn't feeling good. I had the flu that day, and I know it because everybody else caught it. And, you know, again, I told my Dana, come into the house for a half hour, went home with it. And that was just the normal flu. That wasn't what's flying around now. So yeah, it's on my mind, you know?
But there are a lot of people who are stepping up, you know, Jim Lee and other artists who are doing auctions to raise money for comic shops.
Yes. Yes.
There are lots of things out there that people are doing to try and make things better. Speaking of that, I am a fan of Mark Evanier, not just his writing, but also his blog. He has started a YouTube channel where he is doing panels online. He has had a voice actors panel. He did a interview. He and Sergio got on Zoom and talked for a while. So I've really enjoyed that. So head over to the YouTubes and subscribe to Mark Evanier's channel. The San Diego Comic-Con has started their own YouTube channel, and they will be doing a bunch of online panels as well. So I've been following that. I'm a fan of the band Baby Metal. They have been putting up concerts, as I said earlier. So if you're a fan or you just are curious about what Baby Metal is like, subscribe to their webpage, their YouTube page, and they're putting up concerts. Stay home, stay metal. There's all sorts of stuff going on out there. Marvel is putting out a bunch of digital trade paperbacks, by the way, that are basically they're going through and going, oh, here's one, Thanos Loses. It's a series of stories in which Thanos got his ass kicked by Kazar, by Thor. Or, Joe, do you remember the interconnected annuals that Marvel did back in the early 90s?
Yeah. Yep.
They're putting those out as trade paperbacks as well. But they're online only. They're really cheap. You also want to, I don't recommend you believe all the news on Bleeding Cool, but one of the things they're doing, they're announcing when Marvel, DC, and other companies are cutting the prices on their digital trades on Amazon. Dark Horse and Marvel put up a bunch of first big books for free. Not, oh, you know, they're part of the Kindle Unlimited. No, it's okay. Here's the first Hellboy book, free. Here's Marvel putting out these books for free. You download them and you can keep them. The Barbed Wire Omnibus was free. The X Omnibus was free. Tons of cool stuff that now I have on my... I have on my Kindle that I can read when I'm at work or when I'm hanging around the house. But it's free trade paperbacks on your computer. Joe was talking about how comic sales are falling apart and everybody goes on and on. Let's see. Publishers Weekly put out a report that the numbers of print books sold in outlets that report to them are up 10.9%. This isn't just down to bookstores being closed and now opening. Sales numbers were up 4.7% over the week last year. So sales are up year over year. Graphic novels jumped 43% week to week, and they jumped over year to year. Bigger public, bookstores have continued to receive graphic novels from their distributors, while comic book stores largely have not. Marvel, DC, and other publishers have continued to provide the bookstore market with new titles, though Image has not, due to it being exclusive with Diamond. Bigger publishers such as Scholastic have been continuing to put out books. DC, I talked a couple of years ago, and I keep hitting on it, they're putting out 2 young adult books a week. Their sales through that market are shooting up. They're doing well. So for anybody who says, oh, comics are in trouble, no, the direct market is in trouble. And we'll see what happens over the summer as comics begin to ship again. But comics themselves and bookstores are doing really, really, really well. There's all sorts of cool things going on. DC, the day we drop this, DC will announce their next group of solicitations, which means that then we'll get Marvel and Image and Dark Horse and everybody else. So comics are gearing back up. The other thing that I am geeking on comic-wise, I have, other than the stuff that I read for this, I have been going through and reading some of the odder back issues that I have, because I feel this is just kind of the time to do it. And one of the back issues that I started reading through was Swords of the Swashbucklers, which was by Bill Mantlow and Butch Geis. And now he's Jackson Geis because he keeps changing his name. But I read the Marvel graphic novel and the first 6 issues of that. And while there's some stuff in it that's just plain goofy, I don't mind the fact that it's airships in space. And, you know, they're in space, but they're able to, you know, have an open ship. And they fire cannons at other ships, and they grappling hooks and all that stuff. It's space fantasy, and it's really fun. And Bill Mantlow drops enough hints for upcoming stories. I've read the first 6 issues. I'll be reading the next 6 issues over the next week or so. Those Marvel annuals, some of them are really god-awful, but some of them are really fun. The Captain America Von Stuker Gambit, where he faces the Von Stuker children, is just a fun story. Days of Future Present, where the Fantastic Four and the X-Men team up to fight Ahab, who's one of the weirder mutant villains. And also I've been on Marvel Unlimited. They actually put up the first 9 issues of Fear. Now, we mostly know Adventures into Fear because that's where Man-Thing started. And after Man-Thing, it had Morbius the Living Vampire. But the first 8 issues were giant-sized reprints of 50s horror comics. And mostly the monster comics. And I love me the Marvel Monster Comics, but it's fun to read the reprints to see what they chose they thought that would sell in 1971-72, as opposed to some of the other stories where, yeah, we probably shouldn't print this in the 70s. So Marvel Unlimited, a lot of fun lately. They're digging through and finding stuff because they're not really working on the, normally their older stuff is stuff that, okay, we've digitized this so we can print it in a paperback or a hard or a omnibus, but they're really not doing that right now because production is stalled on stuff. So it's more, what do we got that we haven't digitized yet? Oh, cool. Marvel 70s monster reprints. Let's do those. Believe it or not, kids, you have listened to us blather on for an hour and a half.
You know, I got an idea here, Corey.
Sure.
Since we're going to shelve this one, why don't we just That was a pretty good freaking geeking. Why don't we just cut that out, put that in the next episode, and that with the real reviews, and we'll just kind of hobble it together from there.
Okay, I could do that.
Okay. So what you got going the rest of the day?
I am off today, and here's the thing. It's my first day off on all of my days off. I'm actually going to sort all the comics in the living room so that I have room in the living room. I'm going to grocery shop because I haven't for 2 weeks. And watch some stuff that's on the DVR, mostly wrestling because I can have that on while I'm doing other things. What about you?
Is a pay-per-view today? Or
yes, but I do a sleep shift tonight. Oh. So I will watch it when I get home tomorrow. It's Money in the Bank.
See, I want to watch the Undertaker documentary. Because that I think they said is airing. Or is that aired already?
It's on demand. It didn't air. It's on demand.
Okay. I thought WWE was going to... Maybe that's what I read. WWE is going to premiere it after tonight's pay-per-view. Oh. So,
yeah, they have the streaming, the network where it's okay. We show this, then we show this, then we show this, then we show this.
Yeah,
I never tune into that anymore.
No, I don't
pay per views. I watch them later.
Usually, I'll read about them, and then if I hear there's a good match, I'll watch it. But I'm really looking. I want to see that because I guess he kayfabes or doesn't. He doesn't kayfabe. He talks as Mark Caros. And again, I'm excited about the Jim Ross book, but I really, if anybody could write a book about wrestling, he could. Because, I mean, he bridged from, you know, the old era to what's current, and it would be so much fun. I have no idea if he ever will, but the fact he's doing this documentary as Mark, maybe he might. So.
Well, you have a good day. And
you as well.
We'll talk to you next week.
Next week. Yeah, we'll bang out the regular one. Oh, boy, okay. Was that a...